Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 120 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, The National Wheat Yield Contest Stumbles But Gets Up Again, about my conversation with Steve Yale, who directs the contest sponsored by the National Wheat Foundation, an arm of the National Association of Wheat Growers. You might think a project like a national wheat yield contest would be smooth sailing. What's controversial about a wheat yield contest, right? Oh boy. I'll always remember Tom Hammond, the Columbia Grain CEO who died unexpectedly in 2013, for telling me that corn and soybeans are the sand and gravel of the export business, compared to wheat, which has many gradations of quality. That one phrase, sand and gravel, confirmed for me the importance of wheat quality and all that we do at the Washington Grain Commission to promote it. Speaking of which, the 2019 Preferred Variety Brochure, a project I work on with Doug Engel, Cultivar Development Manager at the Western Wheat Quality Lab of the USDA, was recently published. You can find the brochure, which ranks Pacific Northwest varieties by quality, at the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org. Paper copies are available at seed dealers, elevator companies, or by contacting the WGC office. The quality listings can also be found in the Washington Grain Commission section of the April Wheat Life issue. I interviewed Yale February 14, 2019, during the winter wheat meetings held in Washington, D.C. by both the National Association of Wheat Growers and U.S. Wheat Associates. It was at one of those meetings that Gary Bailey, chairman of the Washington Grain Commission, cut through the obfuscation that often occurs when talking about a subject that should be simple but isn't, and said about the contest, "The bottom line is, does the wheat make a loaf of bread or cookies that spread well, or doesn't it?" I've got to give it to Yale. In the podcast ahead, you'll hear him acknowledge the shortcomings of the contest when it comes to the importance of including quality parameters. A 40-year veteran of Monsanto, Yale retired and was then hired as Director of Research and Technology at the National Association of Wheat Growers. He runs the yield contest for the National Wheat Foundation. Yale was raised on a corn farm in Illinois and to this day has 200 acres of corn ground. He also spent most of his Monsanto career in corn and soybean country. I liked the idea of a yield contest for wheat, and I agree with a lot of Yale's reasons for promoting it within the wheat industry. It makes sense to be more aggressive in increasing yields, but quality can't be ignored. Thanks to the outspokenness of many individuals from the Pacific Northwest, the National Wheat Yield Contest is moving to institute stronger quality sideboards, which currently only requires number one or number two grade wheat. Wouldn't it be great if Pacific Northwest farmers proved that quality and yield are not mutually exclusive? Have a pen ready, because at the end of the show, I'll let you know how to win recognition as one of the country's highest yielding wheat farmers, as well as airfare, 3 days accommodations, and registration for the 2020 Commodity Classic to be held in beautiful San Antonio, Texas, next February. I started my conversation with Yale by asking him why we need a national wheat yield contest.
The goal of the contest is to help farmers improve productivity. One of the issues that growers have had over the years is declining productivity when compared to the other commodities, particularly corn and soybeans. And this contest will, we think, help drive farmers to think differently about it, to try different things. So it's really about trying to improve wheat yields and productivity for growers that are raising wheat.
When I saw the number of winters you had something like 22 winters, and I'm thinking, how do you have 22 winters? Explain that to me.
Well, we have four different categories in the contest today. We have irrigated and dry land, and we have spring and winter. So for spring wheats, we have irrigated and dry land. For winter, we have irrigated and dry land. That's four different categories. Then we have an overall winter for just the highest yield we have in the whole U.S. So currently, that's the way the contest is set up in four different categories. For each one of those four categories, we award the top five. So that's 20. And then the overall high yield is 21. And the 22 that you saw were referencing was, we usually try to identify 23, 24, 25, and then see who they are, and then make sure we vet them to see that they've done everything correctly. But eventually we will land on 21 winners.
You measure this against the county average, don't you?
Yes.
Explain that to me.
Well, the way the contest people, organizers, set it up in 2015 was the goal is to somehow give some competitive, not advantage, but equalness, competitiveness across the 42 states that are raising wheat. As you know, you have all these different weather conditions and climatic conditions and soil type conditions and even length of growing conditions that change and affect yield. So how are you going to get it equal for everybody? So at the time, the organizers just said, well, look, we can compare it to the USDA Title I payment county averages that's used. It's already available. It's published. We can use that as a county average, and we'll measure the percent increase above that, because that would give you an idea just how significant the yield is, and that would help equalize it across the whole U.S. So for the first 3 years, that's how it has been measured, and 2018 was, which we just completed, is the last year that we've measured it that way.
So you're going to go to a different measurement?
Yeah, we are. We're going to keep a piece of this percent increase over county average, but we're also going to add just sheer yield across the whole U.S. What we found was that some of these producers that are from counties of low county averages, if they get the right rain, you know, it's easier to double a yield, say 25 bushels in western Kansas in a really arid area, than it is somebody in Michigan he's from a county of 88 bushels to the acre on a county average. It's harder for that gentleman to double his production versus somebody in western Kansas that might get a very good rainfall at the right time. So it really disadvantages those. So that's why we've added this component of we're just going to look at sheer yield, and then after that we'll look at percent increases over county average to make our winner selections.
So is this contest modeled after the corn yield contest? And if it is, what has the corn yield contest brought to that commodity?
I don't know if I would say modeled. It probably is. You know, I wasn't on the original people that helped pull this together, but they did consult with corn. And the biggest question they tried to get from corn was, has it really driven technology and yield in corn? Which is really what we're trying to do here. And the answer to that is, and they keep track of it, is yes. It takes them apparently 10 years from the highest yield recorded in, say, year one. 10 years later, the national average has risen to that level. So they see a lot of activity from growers taking a portion of their acres, doing something different, trying something different, looking at it a little bit different, and then seeing the result and adopting some of those technologies or business or practices that they have incorporated in the contest on the rest of their acres. And in some cases, a lot of them like to tell other farmers about it. So that information does get spread quite a bit. So is it modeled after corn? I would say somewhat, yes. We went to corn, talked to corn. The goal initially was to help identify new practices could help increase wheat yield. The other reason was they wanted to identify who these good wheat farmers are. Who are they? We had no knowledge of who are the good ones and what are they doing differently from people that are not having good luck with it. So that was another reason to do it. And the corn people said, you'll definitely get that. So from those two aspects, I guess you could say, yes, it somewhat was modeled after the corn contest. I think the other significant piece of this is that it was the intent of growers. It was the idea of growers that wanted a yield contest. It really came about because of the declining acres and farmers saying, look, I just can't be productive in wheat anymore to compete. I've got to go to a different crop. And I think that farmers and the leaders of the National Association of Wheat Growers and the National Wheat Foundation talked to other contests in the market, particularly corn, and said, does a contest really help that? And they said, you should try this. It really does. So it's grower-based and grower-initiated, and the reason is to improve productivity.
Okay. So how many farmers entered the wheat contest in 2018, and do you expect those numbers to go up in 2019?
In 2018, there were 318 entries into the contest. That represents 318 varieties entered. Some farmers enter multiple varieties. So that 318 is not 318 farmers, it's 318 varieties entered. It's probably somewhere around 250 farmers or so that represents. Out of that then, only about half go to yield. And that's indicative of any yield contest, whether it's a state yield contest or a national. Only about half of them get taken to harvest because of growing conditions or something happens.
And what about the numbers in 2019?
Okay, in 2019, we anticipate we'll see growth. So the first year, we had 128 entries. In 2017, we had just under, I think it was 280. Last year, we had a little growth of about 30 or 40. But we're getting a lot more interest now. So I would think we're going to be somewhere around 400 entries in 2019 for this year's crop.
Were you surprised by the blowback that the NOG Foundation got initially for not including a quality parameter in the contest?
You bet. Absolutely. I think so. I think that would be the reaction to the foundation board. I think we took the eye off that ball, quite honestly. You know, you forget about why is wheat produced. It is a food crop, and it's so important for quality. So I will be first to admit that I overlooked it, you know, in the first year or two and didn't think we really need to look at that. But by golly, we do. If you want to drive demand and compete in the world market, you better be looking at that. So, yes, we were shocked.
I interviewed an exporter once, and he described corn and soybeans as the sand and gravel of exports, whereas wheat has many different permutations in terms of quality. Corn and soybeans, it's sort of all one quality.
I would echo that. I would also echo that. I would also indicate that wheat is one, the only commodity, to my knowledge, that gets discounted or potential premiums paid at the first point of delivery if quality meets certain standards, whether it's negative or positive. A farmer feels that at the point of delivery, and that's not true of corn and soy in general.
Yes. So how have you addressed the wheat industry's concerns about quality?
It's an ongoing process. So the first year, 2018, we required growers that took their entry to harvest to submit a 2.5-pound grain sample from that plot. We sent that on to, we recorded the sample coming in, and we sent it on to the Wheat Marketing Center in Portland, and they helped us get the sample analyzed. So last year was the first year we required the sample. We took the results. We wanted to see what we were getting. Our only parameter for last year was for a grower to win a national award, he must have yielded a number one or number two grade in the wheat sample. If it did not reach those two grades, they were eliminated from competition. And there were several of those that would have been national award winners that were blocked because they came in with a number three. So that was our first foray into it. Then we also took of the 21 national winners, we did further testing with those samples to do a milling test as well as a dough stability test. And we're looking at the information to see just how we can improve upon it, what we're learning from it, how a farmer, what his management practices were prior to getting that quality result, and is there any correlation between what he's doing and quality. We're not there yet, but we're learning quite a bit. We've got to tighten up our data gathering a little bit.
Now, there are those that would argue that you can't base quality on numbers alone, protein, test weight, flour extraction, moisture, that you need bake tests to truly discover whether a variety performs in terms of criteria like loaf volume, cookie diameter, or sponge cake performance. Do you think we'll ever see those criteria as part of the wheat yield contest?
I would hope so. I think it depends on where sponsors and the industry want to go with it. I think if we get more bakers involved in the wheat yield contest to help defray some of the costs of that kind of testing or drive us to do it and tell us the importance of doing it, I think we'll get there. I will say, though, that what growers are telling us is in a contest like this, measure me on those things that I can control. Measure me on what I can influence. Tell me how I can influence it, and I'll do it. You know, tell me how to get that right quality, to get the loaf volume right, or tell me what I need to do to improve protein levels in hard red spring or hard red winter wheat. Tell me how to do that, and I'll definitely do that. Tell me how to improve carbohydrate quality in wheat. And what is that? You know, quality has been a somewhat of a catch-all term for us in the industry, and I think for a grower, he wants to understand it a little bit better. So getting bakers and millers involved will help us understand it and communicate it to grower. And I think if we can get to that, yeah, we'll get more baking tests done.
So we're just throwing out the word quality, and we're not having anything behind the word in terms of growers understanding what quality means, actually.
Exactly right. I mean, that's my biggest frustration with the term quality. And quality to one baker is a different quality to a different baker. And you're holding a grower accountable? We're holding growers accountable for protein levels in wheat, for the hard wheats. We're holding them accountable because they get either docked or premium. But we're not telling them how to increase it. We're saying, you need to add estrogen. When? How much? Pre-flag leaf? Flag leaf? After flag leaf? How much? 130 pounds? 150 pounds? How much should I put on pre-plant? How much should I put on top dress? He's wanting those answers. He's needing those answers. And in some cases, some areas need sulfur. How much sulfur? When? When should I apply it? That's the kind of information we need to get in the contest for some of these guys. And we're starting to understand it, and we're going to tighten up our data requirements when they submit it to find out. But you bet. We need to quantify it to the grower.
What about including a quality category in the wheat yield contest?
I think we should do that. I really do. I'd like to expand more winning opportunities, I think we'll get more participation. Right now, 21 winners isn't enough. We have 40-some million acres of wheat in the U.S., and we've only got 21 winners. I would love it to be 80 winners and have various categories. A category in quality, I think, could be for every class. If we get more participation, I think it opens up the opportunity in how many more categories you can put in. But you need a robust number of farmers in each class to give you a good contest, right? Mm-hmm. I need 50 to 100 growers coming from each class. And right now the classes are heavily weighted to hard red winter and soft red winter. Mm-hmm. I need more from hard red spring. I need more from the whites. When you get more of those, then you can have a quality category for every class. And I think that would really get farmers to think a little bit more how to impact it, and they will ask more questions of millers and bakers. Oh, what are they looking for? Mm-hmm. But you've got to get them asking those questions.
You have private sponsorship of the contest, including from companies like BASF, Westbred, Lima Grain, and Syngenta. I understand that some companies will pay a farmer's entry fee if they are growing that company's varieties. Doesn't that tilt the playing field in favor of more private entities?
It tilts the playing field into people that sponsor. Right now, some private entities are seeing that the contest is a way for them to expose their technology to a grower, to get an awareness. Yes, it does tilt it that way. But we're also, keep in mind, Scott, in the initial phases of this contest, we're only going into year four. So we're still improving awareness. I think year five or six, we're going to have to look at what kind of incentives you want to give sponsors, right? How do we get the public breeders a little bit more representation in there? What incentives can the contest give them to get their lines into the contest without having to pay? But right now, I think we are so focused on getting this off the ground, getting awareness and interest. We just need a little time to get to where we want to go and get equal representation across the board.
At meetings that I've been attending, I've heard specific companies tout their winning varieties. Was this your intention?
We knew it would happen. I think I knew it would happen. I don't know if the board thought too much about it, the foundation board. But it's clear there are some sponsors that are using it as a commercial platform to launch products, to get awareness of their products.
Now, you just mentioned a moment earlier that you would like more entries, but you have a requirement in the contest that the farmer entering must be a member of the state wheat organization. That would seem to cut back on your numbers. Why are you doing it that way?
Well, first off, the idea came from the National Corn Growers. That's where we got the idea. You know, the National Association of Wheat Growers was looking into it and then handed it off to the foundation because NOG is a policy arm. They needed somebody else to get this thing going, so they went to the National Wheat Foundation to drive it. When talking to NCGA, the National Corn Growers Association, they told us that it definitely helps drive awareness of the National Corn Growers Association. And since they were helping to sponsor it, it's only natural if they're going to ask for people to be a member. So I think it does expose growers, quite honestly, to the importance of representation in Congress on the Hill and what those policy-setting organizations do for them as growers. There's nothing wrong with that. There are some associations that will provide incentives in a form of a discount to their association fee if a grower is entering a yield contest, because the association understands that that's important work that growers do to enter a contest to help drive productivity in wheat. So they're given a break to get in the association, and I encourage other associations to look into that as well.
And I've heard that Nebraska is actually paying half of the entry fee of growers who submit entries. Is that correct?
They have been. The last 2 years, that has been their policy, and I'd have to check with them to see what they're going to continue in 2019, but I bet they probably are.
Would you encourage other state organizations to do that?
Absolutely. It can't be antagonistic. I mean, I think it recognizes a grower's work. You know, he's going to take time to harvest a plot when he's trying to get it in, right? So I think it's a very good incentive.
You want to include a population of heads at harvest as part of future contests. Why is that important?
I just can't believe farmers aren't doing it. Okay, so I'm a corn farmer. I know my soil type can handle, and my weather conditions, on average, can handle 36,000 plants per acre. And I plant it and I hit it.
Yes, but corn is a single plant with a single ear. Wheat, it tillers.
But how many heads are they getting? Why? So my point was, as a corn farmer or bean farmer, they pay attention to population. And they put the inputs to the crop according to the population. I know how much nitrogen to apply in corn based on my population. I make managed decisions based on what I know is in the field. Corn farmers do. Soybean farmers do. Do wheat farmers? How many heads are there? Are you looking for 5 million? Are you looking for 10 million heads? We have farmers in the contest that run a planting rate, a seeding rate from 30 pounds, which is about 500,000 plants, to 240 pounds. So that's over 6 million plants, right? No, 4 million. 4 million plants. So why is there such a range? There's not even close to that kind of range in corn and soy. Mm-hmm. From 30 pounds to 240 pounds to the acre, I tell you why. They're trying to manage heads. Some of those farmers that are planting 240 pounds don't want tillering. They just want a main head, and they can control that. Wouldn't it be nice if they knew exactly what that plant is going to produce? So I think our breeders need to do more communication on what the tillering capacity is on these varieties and really hone in on what the seeding rate should be given their geography. So I really want more information. I want to know I really want to know how many grain heads are out there that they're harvesting to drive a high yield. And I want to know the nitrogen that's correlated to it, the sulfur that's correlated to it, and I want to know the protein that's correlated to it.
So this is the kind of information that you think will help the entire industry if you disseminate it out there. What is the archetypal plant population?
Yes. And I'm getting that information from a lot of agronomists, you know, wheat agronomists. What information do we need from the contest that we can help draw some correlations? Is protein related to nitrogen application? Timing of nitrogen application? We don't have any database that ties that anywhere this broad. And having more information like this that we can give to agronomists to understand it and make the correlations will help a ton.
So in terms of getting an accurate measurement of yield out in the field, what does a farmer have to do? Does he have to have a weigh cart out there?
He cannot have a weigh cart. He has to take it across a certified scale. There has to be a witness there that's not tied to the financial well-being of the farm.
And so are we depending on the farmer's integrity?
No. We're asking the farmer to secure a witness, and we give him a list of potential, you know, people that are qualified as a witness. He secures that witness prior to harvest. The witness has to be there, has to measure or sign off on the measurement of the plot, and he has to sign the scale ticket that this truck went across this certified scale, and here's the witness's signature. Mm-hmm. Those are copied or scanned into the wheat yield contest so everybody can read them. And he has to register who that witness is in his harvest data.
Okay, so there are a few hoops to jump through. Nothing that a Northwest wheat farmer can't surmount with ease. Here are the details for applying to the contest. Deadline for entering winter wheat is May 15th. Deadline for entering spring wheat is August 1st. Information is online and can be found at yieldcontest.wheatfoundation.org. I repeat, yieldcontest.wheatfoundation.org. All one word. With that out of the way, thanks for joining me for episode 120 entitled The National Wheat Yield Contest Stumbles But Gets Up Again, about my conversation with the man in charge of the contest, Steve Yale. His name, by the way, may be pronounced Yale, but it is spelled J-O-E-H-L. Those Scandinavians. A quick note, I'm told these podcasts are the perfect interval for working out. That's right, cue up Wheat All About It and pump iron. Or perhaps do the ironing. Another person thinks they're great for cleaning up the kitchen. I heard from another individual who listens to episodes with his son while working in the shop. Of course, LWD is big. That would be listening while driving. Me, after I'm finished with a podcast or think I'm finished, I email drafts to myself and listen while I'm walking using earbuds. That's right, everybody. Off the couch. Thanks to all of you for listening and for recommending the podcast to others. Assuring this podcast continues happens by assuring listenership continues to grow. Do your part by telling your friends, landlords, family, and agribusiness associates about the only podcast devoted to issues of importance to Northwest wheat farmers, not to mention everybody else who eats. That's all the time we have. Please join me here again next week when I'll be interviewing Samford Eigenbrode about insects and climate change, right here on Wheat All About It!
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.